this time, yeah, just about this time 12 months ago, we were down at a Presbyterian camp in Mosgiel, a little camp called Turahanga, where we were doing a job there. The next one is the inside of it, just to show you what it looks like inside. That's what we live in. It's our home. We've been in there for 5 years now. And at this stage, we don't really want to, we're quite happy to stay, to live in our bus. Well, we've driven as far north as we can go, at Cape Reinga, and as far south as we can go, and that's Slope Point, that's at the bottom of the South Island, as further as point accessible by road. And many, many points in between, as you'll see. That's in Doubtful Sound, beautiful spot up in there, and then it's Mount Cook on the way up, and this one there is at the other end of the island at Bland Bay, right up in the north. It was a sunrise one morning we saw it coming up. We've also been involved, we're also involved in a group called MMM, Mobile Mission Maintenance, and that's the South Island team that we're part of. We tend to work most of our time in the South Island, and that's a group, we're at a church, a Christian camp called Woodend, again where we were doing some work there. So that's the MMM, and a part of the role is that we go to churches and Christian camps and schools and so forth to do project work. We'll do refurbished bathrooms or bunk rooms, repair storm damage. Is that me or not me? Okay. And do anything that needs to be done. The motto is we aim to be a... Is it me or me? Okay. Something in the system? Oh, okay. And so the whole object of MMM is to be a blessing, not a burden. And the motto of the actual organisation is to serve those who serve. And so we'll go to a church and do a job that needs to be done as anything that requires. And most of us are about our age. We all tend to be mobile, living in motorhomes or caravans. That's the project, the way that we work. Now, as many of you know, we have quite a history here at Manurewa. I met the Lord here. We were married here. Our children were dedicated here. And both Betty and I have been involved in the activities of the church. And we left this church here in 1978 to go to a ministry position where we were the directors at Finlay Park Camp out at Cambridge. And we were there for 9 years or so before we moved on. But as we've travelled the length and breadth of this country, we can somewhat connect with the travelling and the nomadic life of our most famous traveller, Abraham, or Abram as he was known then. So we can identify with him, as very often we'll start the year going to a place that we don't know, and we've never been there before. So as you guessed, I may want to talk about Abraham this morning. Well, Genesis 11 tells us about the ancestry of this amazing man, and you can read about it there. But in chapter 12 we read, "Now the Lord had said to Abraham, get out of your country, leave your family and your father's house, and go to a land that I will show you. I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great, and you shall be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you, and all the families of the earth shall be blessed through you." Now this is quite an amazing word really when you think about it. And I've often wondered what went through Abram's mind that day. This is an incredible promise, and quite a challenge really. See, it was quite an upset in his family's life to uproot everything he had and move away from his people, his father's house, to leave behind all that was familiar to him and go to this unknown land. What would he find there? Would there be dangers and difficulties that he couldn't handle? What was the land and the pasture like? Was there water and enough of it to feed his flocks and his families? A million questions must have raced through his mind that day. But you know, the interesting thing is, people, is that we read here that he just packed up his and said his goodbyes and went. Why? Well, God had told him to, and that was enough. Question. If God says to you, leave this place, go to a place that he'll show you to, and that he'd bless you and make you a blessing to others, what do you think might be your response? Would there be 1,000 excuses and reasons? Well, I just really can't go at the moment because I've got a mortgage and the family and rah, rah, rah. Or would you, in dependence upon the provision and protection of Almighty God, make the necessary plans and preparations to go? At the last service of the year, last year, in December, Mick shared a little of the fact that he believed that God is on the move. And Monique told that wonderful story about Shaddai and Palladin, and that how God was moving before Palladin had ventured foolishly through the wall, and how Shaddai went looking for him, for this headstrong and inquisitive young man, even before Palladin had got himself in a position that he knew that it wasn't safe for him to be in. But church, may I suggest to you that God is asking you to go on a journey today or this year, to be on the move with him, to journey into this year, to go to a land that he will show you and make you a blessing. Well, where is that land, you might ask? Well, I believe it's right here. Right into Manurewa. Into this diverse and challenging community. Abraham travelled through the lands until he got to Canaan. And in verse 7 we read, "Then the Lord appeared to Abraham, said, to your offspring I will give you this land. So he built there an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. And from there he moved into the hill country to the east of Bethel and pitched his tent, with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed on, still going on towards the Negev." And as we read on through the story, we find now that there was a famine in this land. And things weren't quite so rosy after all. So what did Abraham do? He decided to go into Egypt. This is where Abraham displayed his humanness. For he decided that a little subterfuge was necessary. You see, Sarai, his wife, must have been an attractive woman. And so he said to her, "Tell Pharaoh when we get there that you're my sister, so that I won't get killed." Just a little lie, just bending the truth just a wee bit. You see, Sarai was in fact his half-sister. So it was sort of partially true. Deceit and deception were rearing and raising their ugly head. Sound familiar? Isn't it interesting and amazing that when things get a little tight, how easy it is to resort to bending the truth just a little bit. Just a little way. Just to get us out of a tight spot. But then notice in verse 17 how the Lord afflicted Pharaoh and his house with great plagues because of Sarai's, Abraham's wife. And then we read in verse 18, "So Pharaoh called Abraham and said, 'What is this you have done to me? Why did you not tell me that she was your wife? Why did you say she is your sister, so that I took her for my wife? Now then, here is your wife. Take her and go.' And Pharaoh gave orders, his men orders concerning him, and they sent him away with his wife and all that he had." Now, the interesting thing is, we don't read the tone of his voice here. All we read is the words. But I can rather imagine, and I think it's reasonably safe to assume, that Pharaoh was not happy. I think he would have been fairly upset and fairly annoyed. Now, the other thing too is it was not wise to upset the Pharaoh, because he had pretty much uncontrolled power. Lies, untruths and dishonesty and disobedience will always get us into trouble. Well, we move on. Abraham and Lot left Egypt and they went into Canaan and on into the Negev. Continuing with our journey, we read in chapter 13, so Abraham went up out of Egypt. He and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. It's the country of Judah. Now Abraham was extremely rich in livestock and in silver and gold, and he journeyed on into the south as far as Bethel, to the place where his tent had been in the beginning, between Bethel and Ai. In But Lot went on with Abraham. Who went with Abraham also had flocks and herds and tents. Now the land was not able to nourish and support them, so they could live together, for their possessions were too great for them to live together, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's cattle and the herdsmen. And isn't it interesting that when we return to the place where God has taken us to, and after deciding to go our own way for a time, there always seems to be strife? Is it because we shouldn't have gone away in the first place? Or what could be called our disobedience, or also called our either refusal or reluctance to actually listen and hear the voice of God, that incurs a consequence and sharply focuses our eyes on him and demands that we bow before him and really seek his face and his leading. Well, action needed to be taken. And so Abraham went to Lot to work out what they could do. It's also interesting to note here that Abraham took the path of peace and conciliation, not wanting division or argument, not wanting to be right or to win. Again, folk, family, how often do we take the moral high ground on a matter of principle and get our noses out of joint when things don't go quite the way that we think they should or expect them to? Abraham gave Lot a choice, the place where he would go, for him to choose. And we read that Lot chose the Jordan Valley. It was well watered, flat land, lush grass, green, and probably a lot flatter than the hills that surrounded it, being well watered too. And with the benefit of hindsight in many years, we could say that he made an unwise choice. But may I suggest to you that given the same options, the same choices, what would we do? May I venture to suggest that we would probably make the same decisions, the same choices. It's easier to be hard and judgmental after the fact, to be self-righteous even. But may I suggest to you that most of us aren't very much different when it comes right down to it. Abraham got what could be seen the rough end of the stick, the hill country, and most likely more difficult access to water for his flocks and his people. But God had promised him this land and that it would prosper him for him. But it must have been a good land, because there was good big trees there and there was water, good grass. Well, they lived there in peace and prosperity for 12 years. Then a rebellion took place. And in the 13th year, there was a war. Remember that Lot was living near the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the war was on his doorstep. The country was involved and the cities attacked and overthrown. The attackers took the wealth of those cities, along with Lot, his family, and everything he had. Well, Abraham heard the news of the attack and the subsequent capture of his nephew. His response? Immediate aid. We read in chapter 14, verse 14, how he took 318. Now, I don't know quite why 318, but that's the number mentioned. trained and armed men, and set out after the enemy. Verse 15 said he divided his forces against them by night, he and his servants, and attacked and routed them, and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is in the north of Damascus. Verse 16 goes on, and he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his kinsman Lot and his possessions, the woman also, and the people. Abram recovered all that he had taken. And it's here that we read about this strange man, this mysterious priest-king called Melchizedek, cited as being the king of Salem. Now this was really quite unusual, as a priest-king was not the normal thing that happened in those days. There was usually a high priest who interceded for the people and for the king, sought God as to what God would say to the king and the people. That was his role. And the king, was his role was to rule the nation and to provide the sustenance and requirements of the priests. It was a very separate roles for the two people involved. To have a priest-king was quite an unusual situation. And we really don't know too much about this man or the position he held. It was generally accepted amongst those who know that Melchizedek was a type of Christ, a forerunner of the Messiah that was to come. But if you want to know more about Melchizedek, Hebrews 7, 1-10 will tell you some more about that. The other interesting thing is that we're first here faced with the issue of the tithe. Verse 20, and Abraham gave him a tenth of all that he had taken. This, by the way, was a voluntary act. It was not a requirement, it was not a demand, it was not an expectation. It came purely from his heart and his desire to be a blessing. Tithing is a touchy subject, one that elicits incredible actions and responses, and has had a lot of bad press over the years. And I really, really wish that preachers would teach and deal with this matter as an issue of the heart attitude, rather than using it as a club to beat people over the head with to bolster finances. King of Sodom was there also that day, and he was so chuffed about getting all his people and stuff back that he offered Abraham all the goods that they'd taken as a thank you note. But notice Abraham's response, that I will not take a thread or a shoelace or anything that is yours, lest you say I have made Abraham rich. I will accept only what my young men have eaten and the share of the men who went with me. Anah, Eshkal, Mamre, let them take their portion. You see, Abraham knew by doing what he knew to be right that God would honour his actions in whatever way God chose, and that was okay. To do what the psalmist said in Psalm 15 verse 4, he who keeps his word does what is right, even when it hurts. A philosophy and a practice that is not taught, I don't find a great deal in our churches. Then we read into verse 15. And after these things, the word of the Lord came to Abram in a vision, saying, Fear not, Abram, I am your shield, your abundant compensation, and your reward shall be exceeding great. Again, that promise of God to us, to him, and ultimately to us. Well, so what do we learn from this man? What do we see in him that can speak to us today? Well, first of all, he was a man who listened for and to the voice of God. And so we learn to listen. And Phil said about finding out who we are this morning. Not so much as what, where you're going and all the rest of it, and this is a part of that process, but where are we? Do we actually listen to the voice of God? Do we actually take time to sit down and be quiet? Church, may I suggest to you, and I'm not being nasty or trying to, but when was the last time that you took some time and went down and sat down and said, okay, Father, what is it that you want to say to me, not what I want to say to you? To listen. Abraham was a man He was prepared to listen. And then he was prepared to obey. To obey seemingly without question or challenge. Again, the question arises, are we like that? We also see that he was pretty human and that he bent the truth quite a bit. He opened himself up for the tricks and the wiles of the devil. In doing so, he incurred the displeasure of Pharaoh. And if you read on, you'll see that he did it again. Slow learner, this guy. So, to recognise our humanness, that yes, we are human, but that doesn't absolve us or excuse us. And sometimes I feel, Stuart, that people use our humanness as an excuse. Oh, well, I'm only human. Sorry. That doesn't cut it. He must have been a fairly astute businessman, for he amassed much gold and silver, a rather clever farmer, and then he multiplied his livestock. Again, the question, are we careful in the handling of ours and the church's finances? Are we careful and wise in what we do with that? Obviously a diplomatic man, having good negotiating skills. How do we fare here in being open, honest, and fair in our dealings with others? Do we take the path of peace, or do we take the path of, oh, well, I've got to be right? He was also a man who was prepared to take up arms for his family, even when it could be said that Lot did the dirty on him. We stand for justice and against inequality and unfairness. Is that our stance? Is that our position? But more importantly, he was a man who honoured God. A man who gave a tenth of what he had gained to Melchizedek, the priest king. A man who wouldn't take what wasn't his, not profiting by by others' misfortune and loss. Is this our testimony? How much do we cheat on our taxes? He was a man of faith and trust, believing that God would fulfill his word and promise. He must also have been trustworthy, and people trusted him. Again, is that our testimony? Is that our presentation? Are we like that? Well, we can learn a lot from this man. The qualities and the attributes that can and will make us a blessing to those whom we are in contact with. Oh, and just, and by the way, how are we at work? What would our employers and workmates say about us? And it absolutely pains me when I hear employers say they would not hire Christians. It breaks my heart. Because we should be the most honourable, most productive, the most honest, most pleasant, the best employers in the spot, in the workplace. But I hear such horrific stories. Well, as you start this year, we don't know where our future lies, where we will go at this stage. We're here for a time. But at the moment, we're not quite sure where we're heading after probably March. We'll have to see where the Lord leads us on that one. The church, are we prepared to go journeying with Abraham? To go to a place that we don't know? Into an area that is foreign to us? To be a blessing? To show Manorewa that we are people of integrity and honour? Not for our sake. Not for the glory of the church or anything else, but for the honour and glory of his name. To go into this fierce and unknown land that lies outside the door. and be the expression of Jesus that this community so desperately needs? Well, to be that expression, that witness, that testimony, you'll need to know him. You have to come to the foot of the cross to surrender your life there, to acknowledge that you are indeed a sinner, a sinful person, that you have not lived up to what he wanted you to do, and you can't do it on your own, that you need Jesus in your life to lead, to guide, to direct, and to be your saviour. Well, family, I don't know if any of you are in that situation, but if you are, may I suggest that today you do something about it. There are people here that will talk with you if you wish, and it will change your life. Pray that God would be with you, that he would bless you, and may we face the year with courage and the knowledge that God has promised us this land. The Lord bless you, and may he prosper you this year. Amen.